I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad.
Kara Walker's new site-specific installation may be one of the most interesting and provocative marriages of art and setting ever created, a 75-foot-long sugar-coated sphinx in the shell of the decommissioned Domino Sugar Refinery in Brooklyn. Its full title is, and it's rather long, At the Behest of Creative Time, Kara E. Walker has confected a subtlety, or the marvelous sugar baby, an homage to the unpaid and overworked artisans who have refined our sweet tastes from the cane fields to the kitchens of the New World on the occasion of the demolition of the Domino Sugar Refining Plant. The show is open to the public Fridays through Sundays until July 6th. It's free, and I'm delighted that it has brought Kara Walker to our show today, along with Creative Times chief curator, Nato Thompson. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Kara, you're best known for your black and white cut paper silhouettes, which explore themes of race, violence, and sexuality in American history, specifically the history of slavery. Do you see this installation as a departure from your previous work? Because obviously it's different in terms of medium and scale, but perhaps not necessarily in theme?
It's similar in theme, I guess, but definitely a departure in scale. And I think some of my research and thinking led me away from maybe the mystery of the shadows and into something a little bit more concrete.
Is this the first large-scale sculpture you've created?
Yeah, absolutely.
And also your first public art project?
First public sculpture, first public project, a lot of firsts.
Did Creative Time commission you to do whatever you wanted in the Domino Sugar Refinery?
Yeah, I think Nato can speak to that. Nato,
yeah, I mean, we really like the artists to just kind of go on a journey mentally, spiritually, yeah. Practically.
It was a lot of journeys. I think you approached me last year in about April or May
around this
of
time.
Last year, and I spent like 3/4 of my year hemming and hawing and sketching and reading and making notes and sketches and pretty much trying to mine everything about sugar and location and myself and blackness and identity.
As you know, as we well figured out, especially as the piece opens, the story of sugar is so deep and so it's so historic that it can kind of start producing these webs of knowledge that I think for a while Kara was, you know, going in a million different directions and has this Borges quality of almost mapping the world.
Right.
And then she realized, of course, you can't make any artwork that looks like that.
I mean, it would have taken a much longer period of time, maybe the rest of my life. And I would have been happy to do that if you would have commissioned it.
In no way am I saying this to embarrass Kara, but there are a lot of sculptors out there. What was the connection for you? Did you think that she might do something that really would add to our understanding of sugar?
Well, there's two parts to this. One is, as anyone knows, when you go in that room, it's no small room to enter into.
And you've used it before, haven't you?
We've had events there, but we've never done an artwork in there. And just, you know, if you inhale, the history of sugar enters in your nose. It smells like a deep, acrid molasses smell. So there's that history there. That said, too, Kara's, in my opinion, the most thoughtful, provocative artist working today. And I just respect her work so much. And, you know, it takes a very special kind of artistic personality in some ways to not compete with the space, but to dovetail with the space.
Right. And I was trying to complement the space.
And you definitely fill it. At least the part where we have this sphinx-like figure.
Right.
How does that compare in size to the sphinx, the great sphinx of Egypt?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's at least a third of the scale, if not a little smaller. I think because the room is so large, it's kind of compressed in this space, and it feels even more monumental than the sphinx.
Well, but it's pretty big. 70 feet long, 35 feet high, 26 feet wide.
True.
And it's made of sugar over a polystyrene base?
Right. We puzzled together this milled sculpture, you know. It was pieced together layer by layer with a great team of workers and sculptors and artists. And then we started coating sugar over the top.
And it's also fascinating because, of course, even, you know, the pyramids and the sphinxes all kind of hint at labor. I mean, you know, the great stories of
slave labor.
Slave labor and how much it took to produce these things.
And I think embedded in that is the meanings, like why people produce giant, great, monumental things. Like those monuments are representative, or at least they're the last representations of empires past, empires lost.
Well, part of your title is a subtlety. What does that refer to?
I was in some of my reading, I happened upon a little medieval novelty that sugar sculptures became very popular in Northern Europe in the Middle Ages and sort of imported from the East along with other spices. And so sugar was representative of power. And I love the idea that not only were chefs creating these sugar sculptures that would represent the king, actually sometimes direct representations of the king. He would be ingested by guests. There was this kind of festival dessert-like quality, sort of a little bit quasi-religious, and it's called a subtlety. I mean, I couldn't think of anything more perfect.
And was your original idea to make the whole big thing out of sugar?
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought, what are the possibilities? I think when NATO knows that in this 8-month process of thinking, I threw out every possible kind of impossible idea, unethical ideas, a lot of environmentally suspect ideas. Yeah. But
well, even as it is, this project with polystyrene has a lot of sugar on it.
It has a lot of sugar on it.
How many tons?
Domino donated 80 tons. To us, we used about half.
Wow, at $5 a 5 pounds, a dollar a pound, that's a lot of
we have
sugar.
Sugar was such a tricky thing to work with. I mean, we did melt it over the top or poured it over the top, but then there are also these sugar boys
right.
who we learned to some degree quite a lot about how to make stuff out of sugar.
Yeah, how not to make large-scale candy sculptures.
You say how not to because some of the sugar statues worked. They're candy.
Right.
And a few of them did
a few
not
of them,
stand
well,
up.
I think that, you know, we could keep working with these if we didn't have the deadline of this show. But they're very, 5-foot-tall modeled sculptures, solid casts of candy, and some melted, some fell over.
And listeners will get a good idea of what we're talking about if they go to our show page at WNYC.org because we have a slideshow of both the large piece and those boys with their baskets. Mm-hmm. My guests are Kara Walker, who has created this extraordinary installation, which will be running open to the public Fridays through Sundays until July 6th. It is free. I was there on Saturday, which was the opening day, and a lot of people came to see it. You must have felt very proud. NATO Thompson is the curator through Creative Time. Creative Time, an organization that commissions artists to do things like
this. That's right. We make public art, but in a more radical way. I think in some ways it's the great civic project of thinking about artists as an opportunity to think through the world in beautiful, dreamlike, but also difficult historic ways.
Now, the Sphinx, I was thinking of that word, subtlety. There's nothing subtle about the message of that Sphinx.
That's the whole joke about loving this term, a subtlety.
Yes. So can you tell us about
she's pretty
that,
overt.
That she's based on a traditional mammy figure. But there's also – it's very highly sexualized.
I think she's sort of polymorphous, and she has so many different sorts of types of reed. I think from the kerchief on her head to the African features, which are very strong and maybe somewhat exaggerated but not, I think, grotesquely so.
But
the
she's also
breasts.
White because
well,
she's made of sugar.
Covered in this refined sugar, which has a lot of other layers of meaning, why this brown substance is considered more valuable as it's refined and turned into a white crystal. She's got her fists out forward. One fist is configured into a kind of fertility gesture that could also be an epithet of many sorts. She's got a large bottom, which from the backside is all you see.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely
in a submissive pose.
Well, you could say it's both submissive and domineering. The way she holds the space from the front should give you an impression of, where she's at and where you stand in relation to her. But she's so much larger than anybody in the room that she can't really fully submit, let's say.
It's pretty impressive, too. You know, the more I spend time with the piece, it just keeps unpacking itself in these – there's always so many fun words that mean many things at one time. But, you know, I was thinking, too, like –
Well, it's a very refined piece.
Exactly. You know, it says a lot about the art world in some ways, too, this idea of refinement and taste. But also, too, what's interesting is when talking to Kara, it's not just a critique, right, that, in fact, she's also – it's very sympathetic to this thing called sugar that, you know, as much as you may say it's a critique of sugar, there's not many people that haven't had a special moment with this material.
Right. I think that's the thing that's interesting about sugar, and sugar has acquired meaning because we desire the taste that sugar provides, the sweetness.
And you said that you did a lot of research. I'm assuming you did a lot of research.
I did some research, yeah. I hope it was enough.
The history of sugar, the sugar trade, but also the history of Domino sugar?
A little bit of the history of Domino, but I think mostly the history of Domino is a part of this larger, you know, 500 or 1,000-year history of sugar. I was really interested in sugar's arrival in the New World, and so I think of this as kind of a sphinx for the New World.
Tied to the slave trade?
Tied to the slave trade, tied to a triangle trade that included both Africa, the Caribbean, and Europe, and the United States in the form of molasses, rum, and the invisible commodity, and all of these trades between sugar and sugar plantations and rum refineries was African bodies.
Well, those smaller figures, the boys carrying baskets, are covered with molasses, aren't they?
Yeah,
rum as well, or
just
I only
molasses.
Smell the molasses. some of them, the ones that that were actually made out of candy, sugar, they look like they're melting a bit.
They are melting, yeah. My goal, and maybe for a future project, is to make these candy boys and have them disappear or you know, just sort of be consumed by their own construction.
I mean, they're, you know, it's so wild because you look at them and they literally look like they're – you see them dripping. You know, they're really like – they're very visceral. And it almost, too, just in looking at their kind of textural qualities, they look like they almost just walked right out of the walls.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like a dream, like they just emerged there. And they're very temporal. Something about their dripping makes you feel like they're somewhat alive almost.
And I think the other aspect, you know – two of the candy boys fell and shattered just prior to the opening, and we picked up the pieces and scooped them up into buckets, and I put them into the baskets of the remaining figures. And there was something in that gesture. I knew something would have to happen at the last minute that would sort of bring their relationship to one another full circle.
You mentioned that they look like they walked out of the walls. That's because the walls are still covered with the molasses, the natural molasses that came out of the process of refining the sugar.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's so crazy is – so we just reading about the history of sugar, that building itself in relationship to sugar. So, you know, the Havermeyer family built it. And Theodore Havermeyer, the son of who actually kind of managed it, was known, funny enough, as the king of sugar.
Okay.
Which is such an interesting – to go back to the idea of subtleties.
Right.
And, of course, now best known as the name of a street in Williamsburg,
yes.
Havermeyer. I'm sure I mentioned that there were huge crowds coming out.
Yeah, sure.
The reviews have been fabulous.
Yeah.
What kinds of things have people been saying to you?
It is eerily positive.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's such a – you know, for such a kind of, in some ways, macabre piece.
It's a pretty dark piece. It's a very dark piece, actually. But I think it has this – and I sort of wanted to bring this into the world, a crowd-pleasing effect that would also, you know, Trojan horse-like reveal all of these internal conflicts. And I know that there have been some arguments on site, and I think that that's very interesting and compelling and problematic. And, you know, people leave with an assortment of very heavy feelings.
I think it's mostly because of the power of the imagery. People can't help but be moved by them one way or the other. What will happen when the show closes? Are they going to be destroyed?
It's going to be destroyed. Aww. I'm not entirely sure how.
And then they're going to tear down this building and put up some high rise?
That's right. That's the story.
Kara Walker.
Recently I've heard it was going to be a park. But.
Well, you know, just to say, Kara has wanted to open up, like, bash through the doors and sell it down the East River. So
yeah, it's on Kent Avenue and South First Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. My great thanks to Kara Walker and Nato Thompson for being on our show.
Thanks.